Okay, welcome in and welcome to episode 8 of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming and Gillespie LLP personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. What's going on? It's Pat Steinberg along with you on this week's episode, and we've got a great one for you. It is Tim Hunter in the spotlight this week. Can't wait to hear some stories from the Calgary product, Calgary born and raised, Tim Hunter, and the Flames all-time franchise record holder for penalty minutes. We've got some great stories coming up, and obviously all hosted by our hosts, Brent Cron and Colin Patterson. We will get to the conversation momentarily. The Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles, available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, as part of the Flames Talk podcast feed. And before we dive in on the conversation, it is time for This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda, and we are going back 21 years ago. This week, we're taking you back to May 9th of 2004.
Here's a Ginla. Jerome Ginla looking for a chance, coming late. Bonador scores! Steve Bonador is your hero in game one as the Flames strike first in the Western Conference Final. His first ever Stanley Cup playoff goal, and he'll never forget it.
Oh, man, if you were a Flames fan during the 2004 run, maybe the most memorable of all the moments, only because what an incredibly unlikely hero. The late Steve Montador scored the overtime winner as the Flames won Game 1 of the Western Conference Final 4-3 over San Jose, going back to May 9th, 2004, 21 years ago this week. Mika Kiprusoff made 49 saves. Montador scored the game winner at 18:43 of overtime. Calgary took a 1-0 series lead and, of course, would go on to win the Western Conference Final over San Jose in 6 games. And they got it all going on the right foot 21 years ago this week. That is This Week in Flames History, brought to you by Village Honda, your dealer for life in the Northwest Auto Mall. Okay, it is Tim Hunter in the spotlight this week, and let's dive into the conversation right now. Hosted by Brent Cron and Colin Patterson, it's Tim Hunter. Let's jump into the conversation right now.
Where did you grow up in Calgary?
So we're talking
now?
We're talking now. Yeah. I grew up in Acadia.
Acadia.
Yeah. So Acadia, if you don't know, it's not far from here,
yep,
off McLeod Trail. And you see, we were working class people, blue collar, one car. So we had one car garages, one car. Yep. Willow Park, which is just a little south of Acadia, they had two cars and they had two car garages. So, you know, we were poor.
Oh, poor guy. Poor guy. It taught you to be a tough guy, though. You had two brothers, right?
Two older brothers, the youngest of three boys.
Yes.
Timmy, Tony, and Tommy. And my mom, we had a half brother. He was from a different father than my dad, and his name was Terry.
Oh, my.
Timmy, Tony, Tommy, Terry. My dad go, which one are you? I said, I'm your favorite one. Yeah, that's right. You're my favorite one.
That's so good.
The youngest, the smallest, all the hand-me-downs, skates, sticks, everything.
Did they throw you in net at
no,
all?
No, I didn't get that abuse.
No.
But we did play like boot hockey at the rink, and we had a set of gold gloves, a set of GM12s, Coopers. They were beauties. And catch glove blocker, so I did play then in net.
No helmets, though?
No mask, no helmets, no.
Was the orange ball out then, too? You know, the old street hockey
ball? No, we used a tennis ball.
Tennis ball.
And that, when it was frozen, not good. You get that in the Killions.
My, you know I talk a lot. So my old man.
I didn't know that.
Couldn't tell, could you? He would shoot on me on the driveway, right? And I put all the street hockey gear on. I get in net, and I was Mike Vernon. I was Mike Vernon every time I went in net, right? And I was probably his size by the time I was 12. But he would shoot the puck, and he's like, just stop talking and focus on the ball. My dad finally shot it at my face with no mask, and he would hit me. He hit me in the tongue. It swelled up so fat, I couldn't even sit there and talk while I was doing this because it was so easy to stop the ball. But he hit me. He goes, just shut up already and stop the puck.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays, that's called child abuse.
Yeah.
They would come and take your child away from you if you did that. But, well, we were lucky because the rink was close, Acadia Community Center. They had two outdoor sheets of ice and then one for, free skating. And my dad had a key to the light box. So on Friday and Saturday night, so they'd go over there Friday night when all the kids were done, shovel all the rinks off, and then flood them for Saturday all-day hockey. And then they'd do it Saturday night. Because he had the key, if we had our homework done, we'd go over to the rink and play until midnight on the rink, with skates or boots, depending on the temperature out. And that was fantastic. It was just so cool. Just make sure you turn the lights off when you leave.
Did you have to flood it yourselves?
No. My dad, they had all the dads, volunteers, they had it all done. So we'd just go over there at 9 o'clock, and the ice was all done, flooded, shoveled, and then we'd play. Skate. Man. The whole ice to ourselves.
That was the best. I grew up like that too, right, where you had that one ice surface that the group just took care of. And you know, you get the odd guy out there going for a stroll in his jeans. And a hockey game would break out, and you'd be like, hey, buddy, get off the ice. We're playing hockey here, right?
Yeah, we had to skate across the free skating ice to go to the rinks. Like, I mean, even nowadays, they still have a lot of those rinks. I live across the street here in Garrison, and we have an outdoor rink in front of us in the park. And the dads, I think Co-op is a sponsor of putting these plastic sheets down. They give them out. Put the boards up, put the sheets down, flood it, the whole bit. I came home in January, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to go over there, and it was snowing. I was going to shovel the rink. It's about 4 o'clock on a Friday, and I'm out there shoveling, and there's about 6 or 8 inches on, and I'm like, I get a quarter way done. And I look, and two guys are walking across through the park, and they have two snowblowers. I'm going, what a fool I am.
No kidding.
Doing a good deed. They're probably laughing. They go, who's that old guy out there?
Look at this shovel out there shoveling.
Shoveling.
Yeah. Did you play any other sports growing up aside from hockey?
I played soccer. My dad's from England, so I played soccer for a long time. But then we started playing lacrosse, and my dad was like, another game where you can carry a club in your hand to hurt the other guy. He'd love that. You got a hockey stick and a lacrosse stick. So I played lacrosse, hockey. Never really was into baseball. I had buddies that played baseball, but soccer, lacrosse, hockey. And then I swam as well. I was, loved swimming. So I still swim now to stay in shape.
Were you told to do other sports too? Did they say, hey, you got to pick something for the summer?
No. I think it's just, just staying active. We're three brothers. We're just hellions for my parents. Get out of the house. Go to the rink. Go away.
Get out of my hair.
Yeah. You know, and my dad taught soccer for a while, but soccer was a kind of a dying thing in the 60s for some reason. And then lacrosse, box lacrosse. It was so much fun. You know, and, I was came t- today like a four people I'm sitting with over there across the restaurant here. I grew up with them in Acadia. They're all from Acadia. I have so many friends today that I grew up with as a kid. People are like, you've got friends from when you're a kid still? I go, yeah, because a lot of people move around. I lived in the same house till I was 17. Then I went away and played hockey. But, you know, you grew up in one house. You stayed there, lived there. My parents worked. My dad worked. My mom never worked. And it was fantastic. And so, lucky man.
Favorite team growing up as a kid?
Well, Toronto. So in the 60s, and we were just talking about that, you know, they used to start the game about halfway through the second period in the early 60s. And we got Toronto in the West, and the only time we saw Montreal was when Toronto was playing Montreal. So I was Toronto in the early going, you know, they won in 67. Saw that. But then Toronto was playing Chicago one night, and I'm like, that's the team. They had Keith Magnuson, Phil Russell, Stan Mikita, Bobby Hull, and the logo. So I'll tell you a funny story. My first year pro, I'm playing in Birmingham, Alabama. And John Brophy, he's just a maniac coach. And he's always saying stuff, and he's poking fun at me. And so the team's getting ready to fold. I've told you this story before. The team's getting ready to fold, and we're not making any money. And it's all this strife. And And Brophy's trying to crack a joke, and he comes in one time. He's yelling and screaming F-bombs this, and you effing guys, we're not making any effing money and this and that and the other thing. He says, right now, the only money we're making is we're renting Timmy Hunter's face out for the Chicago Blackhawk logo. So every time I see the logo, I just go, hey, that's another little bit of commission in Tim Hunter's pocket. They're renting my face out for their logo.
The royalty check.
Yeah, right. It comes
mailed to the Hunter residence.
Yeah, so I was a big Blackhawk fan for a long time. And to go into Chicago and play in that old Chicago stadium, Patter knows it was so intimidating. You had to walk up the stairs, go out in the ice. And so the first time I'm in there, Bob Johnson's the coach. And he's like, Timmy, we're going to rest you tonight. Well, he's rubbing his nose. And I'm like, Bob, I've been resting for like 6 weeks. Can I play sometime? Anyway, so he says, what you got to do is you got to go up those stairs. And right when the anthem is, go up those stairs and watch the anthem and be part of it, because that's really intimidating hockey. And you want to make sure you experience that. And I'm going, oh, thanks a lot, Bob. Well, all the guys are playing. I'm going to stand there and watch and listen to the anthem.
He's looking out for you.
Yeah. I think I sat out 6 straight weeks. I hadn't played. And I said, you know, Bob, I haven't played in 6 weeks. I'm well rested. He goes, one more night, Timmy, just one more night.
The positive Bob Johnson.
Yeah, Bob, that's right. The positive. Everything had an inference with hockey.
Was it just one more night, or did he string you
along? No, I actually played the next night in St. Louis, so that was it. Yeah, he did put me in.
There you go. True to his word.
Yeah, true to his word. I don't think I ever sat out after that. To be honest, I think it might have been a, hey, stand up for yourself. And that was a moment I'm like, Bob, I'm resting you. I'm well rested. Yeah, but that was Bob. He didn't say, Tim, we're sitting you out, or, you know, or you're not making the song tonight, son, you know, or there's your jersey's not hanging up when you go in the room. So, you know, like one time, here's a good story. One time we go into Philadelphia, it's early in my career, going to Philadelphia. They've got Ben Wilson, Glenn Cochran. They got this tough, tough team. And come off the ice and after warm up, and coach wants to see us. So I go in the coach's office, and Ken, Bob Johnson, and he says, Tim, you're not going to play tonight. We're going to rest you. And so I'm like, thought for sure I'm going to play in Philadelphia. So I go in the room, and Lanny and Reiser and these guys are going, you're not playing? And they go storming in the office. They go, Bob, this is where you play, Tim Hunter.
This is the building.
So, you know, and that was another thing. Those guys, you know, the leadership, they stuck up for you.
Did you get in?
No, I didn't play. No, he didn't change his mind. No. But, you know, but that's what you needed. You know, I needed that. Those guys in my corner to make sure they were helping me out.
That was the Philly Spectrum, right?
Yeah.
That was a tough building, too.
Yeah, well. Big time.
Yeah.
Broad Street, right on Broad Street.
Who was your favorite player growing up as a kid?
Well, didn't really have anybody on the Leafs. I just liked hockey. I didn't really get a favorite player until I watched the Blackhawks, and that was Keith Magnuson. Number 3 defenseman, right shot. So I was a defenseman my whole career until I came to the Flames. I played 2 years in the minors as a defenseman. I got called up to play my first game, played left wing. So anyways, he was a defenseman, tough as hell, could really fight, play, and it was cool to watch him. And you know, he went to the University of Denver. He's a, you know, a smart guy, passed away tragically and all that story. But, I just liked the way how hard he played, and that's kind of how I modeled my game.
And then they just stuck you on the wing.
Well, yeah, you know, when I was playing junior in Seattle, I'd been drafted by the Atlanta Flames. So Cliff comes to watch me in Seattle, and after the game, he said, hey, I got some great news for you. And I said, oh, yeah. He says, we're going to change the roster. We're going to go from 17-2 to 18-2. So we're adding another player on the roster. So I want you to think about something. I know you're a hell of a junior defenseman. He says, but I don't know if you're going to make it full-time as a defenseman in the NHL. You might want to think about playing a little bit of wing. So we can use you as like a 7th D or a third guy on the fourth line. So that's kind of, he put that seed in. But I never played not one lick of forward in the minors, 2 years. Played for Tom McVie, Brophy, and then I played a little bit in Colorado with Pierre Paget. And I played defense the whole time. And even when I got called up, I get called up first game playing the Philadelphia Flyers in Calgary in the old Corral. And I play left wing, you know, and that, but that's.
And you were fine with that. They said you're playing left wing. You're like, yeah. I don't care. I'm playing the National Hockey League. I'll play wherever you want to put me.
Well, my saying was I'll play left or right. I just don't want to be left, right, out.
Oh, well, he's got them all.
Yeah, he's got it. Good for you. That was a good one. Your junior career, 300 PIMS 1 year.
2 years in a row.
Yeah, I'm looking at 300 and 311.
Yeah, casual.
Yeah, just from hooking.
Well, I was drafted as an 18-year-old. They changed the draft, and I never, ever thought I was going to get drafted. And I had probably only about 40 points as my first year, 35 or something. But 300. And I played junior in BC in the BCHL, and I was really started to, you know, I was a defenseman, I was really tough. The year before, I played in Fort St. John, and I never fought in hockey before. And I was just up in Grand Prairie at a fundraiser, and I was telling this story. I had my first hockey fight ever in Grand Prairie, playing in the Peace Caribou Hockey League, 16-year-olds playing junior B against men, 20-year-olds, guys had jobs, kids. And the Camelos Chiefs at the time thought it was good for my development because I was a big kid at 14, 15, playing midget hockey. I just went through everyone, scored, ran over people. Like, nah, it's not going to be good for me. Put him in the Peace Caribou Hockey League. So I play up there, and I had this fight against this guy, and I don't know what happened, but fight him. I didn't do very well. So after the game, my brother had come. He was working the Oil Patch. He'd come to the game, and after the game, he's got me in the parking lot. He goes, what are you thinking? Fighting that guy. He's got a beard, for Christ's sake. The guy's probably 20 years old, and I'm 16. And he says, he gives me a few little tips and how to stand and stay athletic and this and that, so I didn't get thrown around like a rag doll. And, you know, 3,146 penalty minutes later, I think I did a pretty good job at it.
Just going over your career stats of what you did, what you accomplished, just, you know.
Well, just add up the penalty minutes. So 3,146, and then all the playoff penalty minutes, then my 600 penalty minutes in junior, and probably another 300 in the BCHL and the Peace Caribou Hockey, I probably had 6,000 penalty minutes in 5 years.
Plus exhibition.
Plus exhibition.
I never really liked to fight in exhibition. It was like, you know, unless I really had to, you know. And that's the fighting thing is like, it was great, you know, when I was starting, like talking about my first game playing the Flyers, the veteran guys said, hey, Hunts, just play your game. Do whatever you do. You're tough. You can handle yourself. Oh, and hey, Glenn Cochran, this is how he fights. He holds you back, and then he comes right up with a big uppercut. So, you know, keep your distance, otherwise you're going to get hit in the chin. And I did that, and I'm like, well, thank God I listened to Phil Russell about fighting Glenn Cochran. Because, I was like a few shifts in my first game, and I'm fighting one of the toughest guys in the NHL, and I did okay. So, you know, it's...
Did you search him out, or did he come finding you? Or?
No, I ran into him in the end boards in the corral, and the glass came out, and he wasn't happy about that. So, you know, it just kind of was tough and looked after my teammates, and the guys would say, hey, Tim, well, the next night we played Boston, you know, hey, don't fight Terry O'Reilly. And I said, you know, that's not me. I don't do that. I fight for three reasons, for you as a teammate, me as myself to protect myself, and for our team, the integrity of our team. If they were being pushed around or being bullied or whatever, other teams showing disrespect, that's why I fight. I don't fight to just have a fight, because the moment you start doing that is when you're going to get knocked out and somebody's going to hurt you and your career's going to be over. You don't take anyone lightly. You know, so the next night, here's a great story, playing the Bruins, and O'Reilly's not playing, but they said, hey, Wayne Cashman, he's a real nut bar. Hunts, don't fight him. I'm like, guys, I'm not going to fight Wayne Cashman just to fight Wayne Cashman. You know, well, he get the stick up and poke in the eye. So we face off again. I'm playing left wing, and he's a right winger. So we're right beside each other. Right before they drop the puck, he steps on my stick and breaks my stick. And he's going, what are you going to do now? I said, well, I'm going to go get another stick. So I go.
Excuse me, sir.
I get another stick. And then years later, I'm playing in San Jose my last year. And he's assistant coach with Al Sims. He goes, hey, Hunts, I sure was messing with you, wasn't I? When I stepped in, I knew the guys told you not to fight me. I go, yeah,
You're a beauty.
Yeah. No penalty either. Hey, just
No. So I did that a few times. Yeah. Ask Cruiser when you ever get him. Oh, ask absolutely. Him right in front of the Flames bench. I'm playing for the Canucks. And come and play the Flames. And face off right in front of the dot, right outside the blue line. I stepped on his stick right in front of all his teammates. He's going, Jesus Christ, Hunts. I spend half the morning getting that thing ready.
You know, Cruiser's told me that. And he said the exact same thing. And I would just spend all the morning getting my stick ready. I taped it the way when everything was perfect. And then Hunter had to go step on it. And
Carey Fraser comes over. He goes, Timmy, I could give you 10 minutes for that. But he says, I like it. He says, that's beautiful. He's teaching that kid a little lesson. Yeah. Tune him up a little bit.
A little initiation. Hey, welcome to the
league. Yeah, yeah.
Who were some of the favorite referees that when you'd be on this? They were obviously looking for you, I would imagine, most games. But is there a couple referees in mind that you have where, hey, you know, they were great guys and they were on your side or really building the game?
All the older guys were good. They were smart. And they, you know, hey, good job. And, you know, be careful and you know, respectful. And, you know, some of them, though, you know, they'd say, Tim, you got to leave. And, you know, and then I'd quit because I was ready to kill somebody else after I killed one guy. And I'd be going to the box. And as soon as I got in the box, they go, that's Hunter, 2 for roughing, 5 for fighting, and a 10-minute misconduct. And I go, you lied. You said you weren't going to give me a 10. You're a liar.
That's so good. You lied to me. You heard me. You lied to me.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, and they knew, you know. They just, you know, it was probably about 11 or 12 minutes left or 13 minutes left in the period. They wanted to make sure I wasn't coming back on the ice again. We'll take care of this guy. He's not going to get back on the ice again. He's done for the night.
Hunts, let's talk about your first goal.
First goal, Edmonton, 1981, I believe, in Edmonton. Pass from Dave Hindmarsh, cross. Grant Fuhr in goal. I played against Grant in junior. He was in Victoria. Didn't score too many goals on me. He's a good junior goalie. But the best part is, Patter, and that's why you want to ask that story, is we used to have these Christmas parties, gag gifts. And so Mel Bridgman's got me, and I get called up. I'm sitting on Santa's knee, Paplinski Santa, and he goes, little Timmy, what do we got here? And it's this thing. It's quite tall, and he's instructed me where to start opening it. He's got to open it at the top. So I peel out down the paper, and it's a wood plaque, and there's a little plate on there. It says, Tim Hunter, first NHL goal, December 4th, 1981, goalie Grant Fuhr, assist by Dave Hindmarsh. Might be 82. I don't remember. So I'm going, wow, this is pretty cool. A guy's got me my first goal puck plaque. And I pull it down a further, and the puck's about half the normal size, and all the side pieces are all chunked out of it. And like the old saying, put the biggest piece in the net. That was a beauty. That was a beauty. The best one was Dan LeBreton had been sitting out, like they were resting him for like 6-7 weeks. He hadn't played forever. And they got him a stick. They gave him a stick, and it was about 30 feet long so he could play from the press box.
There were no rules around here.
No. It was, that was fun stuff because you had all the guys and the families, the wives and the girlfriends there and stuff, and just a great experience.
Well, those gag gifts, when you do them at Christmas time, and you know, you can tell the real good teams are the ones that get the real good gifts, right? Guys are joking, they're laughing, it's all hilarious, right? I'd never heard 30-foot stick. That is unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just our group in those days. There was, everyone really got along, you know, the families, and we were treated like a family from the ownership. So, you know, there was great culture and great buy-in, and when we did stuff, it was done well, like Christmas parties and Halloween parties, the costumes. I just loved making costumes. Halloween parties were great. They had a great time. It was so much fun. But that's what's being when you win, yeah, you have all those memories of winning, but you also have the memories of those times with your teammates, and they last forever.
You didn't spend a whole bunch of time in the minors, though, hey? Off and on for 2 seasons or so?
Well, yeah, it was 2 years. First year in Birmingham, the team folded, and then I went to Halifax. So they had a minor league dispersal draft, and Gord Wapple and I were the first two guys picked, me, then Wops, go to Halifax, Montreal Canadiens farm team, and was a great experience. We were in the playoffs, so we were in the. It was fun. And then the next year, Oklahoma City. I got called up at Christmas for my first two games. Lots of fun. Tom McPhee was unbelievable guy. Like from going from slapshot character John Brophy to Tom McPhee, old school mentor, dad, grandfather, coach guy, to from one extreme to the other. I have more stories from my first 2 years in pro hockey than I have for the next 18. Like, it's just, the minors were something else. And I know I was listening to the Vernie podcast and Patter, and you guys were talking about those days in Colorado, and you got five guys living in a house together, and all that stuff is just like so much fun and great memories. And then I saw that the following year, I'd hurt my knee in Oklahoma City. Came up and made the Flames, and I didn't play much. I only played 16 games, and then they sent me down to Colorado. And I go down to Colorado, and here I am. I'm playing defense again in Colorado after playing half the season in Calgary as a right and left winger. And, you know, Pierre Page I never told a coach in any – that was the only time I ever got mad at a coach, and I told the coach – I said, Pierre, if you don't shut up, I'm going to punch your effing lights out. He was going so berserk on the bench one night, and we were in first place, and then slowly started losing a few games, and Pierre is just losing his mind on the bench, and the guys were like, somebody's got to say something to this guy because he's just like out of control. And I just went, I told him right on the bench, you say another word, and I'm going to punch your lights out. I said, shut up. But I was screaming, obviously. I went in after the game, and I apologized to him. I said, Pierre, you have to be our coach, and you're losing your mind behind the bench. What do you think we are doing? Where's the composure? You have to be composed as a coach. You can't do this. Yeah, I know, Tim. I know. I said, so I'm sorry. It'll never happen again. Oh, yeah, Tim, you know, all this. You know.
Jimmy.
And that is French accent. He was a wonderful guy. So I went to Quebec in 91 from the Flames. They left me available in the expansion draft. Tampa picks me up. They traded me the next day to Quebec. So now I was reunited with Pierre, my buddy.
Was that for Lindros?
Yeah. Yeah, Mike Ricci, yeah. Lindros, all those guys. Yeah.
Yeah, you were on the radar.
Actually, they traded me for a couple players. Martin Simard and some other guy. Oh, and yeah.
Martin was here.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah, but yeah, they, yeah.
What do you remember about your first National Hockey League game?
Well, it was, so I'm in the minors. I get called up. It's Calgary. When I was drafted to the Atlanta Flames, my dad's like, Tim, do you realize there's no further NHL city away than Atlanta from Calgary? That's the farthest possibly you could have been drafted to an NHL team. I don't think I'll be coming watching any home games. You're going to have to be in Edmonton or Winnipeg or Vancouver for me to come and watch you play. So I get called up. I'm playing in Calgary. And, they, you know, like the moment they moved the team to Calgary, I was like pretty cool, you know, to have the chance to play in your hometown in the NHL. So I get called up, call my parents, get tickets in the corral. They were hard to come by. There was
How much
so
were
few.
The tickets?
I don't know, like $18 or $21 or something. I think I have one. It was like $18 or something. And they're up there and, you know, and couldn't see him because all the smoke around the top of the ring. Smoking, you know.
Elite athletes.
So, and no, and just being in the room with, you know, and you get to know the guys, being at a couple training camps, and all the guys were just so good to me. And you remember that later on when you have young guys come up and rookie guys and how to make them feel comfortable, because it's a big deal. You're playing your first game. You're nervous as all get out. And you're like, now for me, and then I'm going to have to play left wing and facing off against Ben Wilson and Glenn Cochran, you know, like two great guys. Glenn just died last year. And I chat with Ben Wilson now and again on social media. He's got a farm in Saskatchewan. You know, it's once the game's over, you know, it's all water under the bridge, right? So, no, it was fun. It was great. It was a great to play in your hometown.
All right, we're just getting started with this week's conversation. Tim Hunter in the spotlight, and we got more great stories coming your way as we continue along on the program. But first, it is time for some Flames trivia this week, brought to you by OSY Rentals. Make the best use of your oil field production budget. OSY's Vapor Tight package comes with everything required downstream of the wellhead. Call 1-855-OSY-TANK. And with Tim Hunter being the focus of this week's episode, that is what our trivia question is focused around. As I mentioned a little earlier, Tim Hunter is the all-time Flames penalty minute leader. He holds the franchise record with 2,405 penalty minutes. I need to know, who is number two on the all-time penalty minutes list behind Tim Hunter? Give you a few seconds to think about the answer. Okay, the correct answer, did you get the right one? The second leading penalty minutes leader in franchise history behind Tim Hunter is Gary Roberts. Yeah, Gary Roberts, a career 1,736 penalty minutes with the Flames behind Tim Hunter's 2,405, which remains the franchise record. There you go. It is Gary Roberts is your correct answer, and that is this week's Flames trivia brought to you by OSY Rentals. Okay, we've got lots more to get to in our conversation this week with Tim Hunter. You are locked on the Cumming & Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming & Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. Stay with us as the conversation continues. And welcome back. It's Pat Steinberg along with you as we continue along on episode 8 of the Cumming & Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Tim Hunter in the spotlight this week. Cumming & Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. We'll get back to the conversation with Tim Hunter along with Brent Cron and Colin Patterson here very shortly. But first, it's time for Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services. And this week, we are saying hello and catching up with Ronnie Stern, who was born in Quebec back in January of 1967, a former 70th overall pick by the Vancouver Canucks in 1986, was traded to Calgary for defenseman Dana Merzhin a few years later, and was known as one of the league's toughest enforcers, played seven seasons with the Flames, racking up more than 1,200 penalty minutes. Today, Ron Stern, still here in Calgary, working with Burner Energy and Burner Well Services, a private oil field service company. That's what Ron Stern is doing right now, and that's catching up with Ron Stern on Where Are They Now? Brought to you by Pure Chem Services, the expertise to realize higher production and lower costs. Okay, let's jump back into the conversation. Ron Stern was a feared enforcer in his days, but there is nobody more feared in Flames lore when it comes to enforcers than Tim Hunter. It's part two of the conversation with Tim, Brent Cron, and Colin Patterson. Let's listen in right now.
Huntsie, when did you find out you're getting called up? Like, were you in Birmingham then?
No, I was in Oklahoma City.
Okay.
Yeah, we were on the road. We're on the road. And I think we're in Nashville. And Tom McVie says, hey, I got some good news. And the flight was, team was leaving, so I had to stay in the hotel. Flight was the next morning through, I believe it was through Minnesota to Calgary. So I'm sitting in the airport in Minnesota getting ready to get on my flight from Minnesota to Calgary. And I'm looking, there's a whole bunch of guys sitting in the waiting area, you know, where the gate was. And I'm looking, and I recognize Ron Flockhart. I played junior against him. And he comes over, he goes, Hans, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm going up, play against the Flyers tomorrow night. He goes, well, you're sitting amongst the Philadelphia Flyers. We're flying commercial. Yeah. And I had a seat in first class, and they were all in the back in steerage.
That's good.
It was like, so I'm sitting up there, and all these guys, because Flocky has a nose like me, they thought I was his brother, and they're going, "Why are you talking to that guy over there?" And he goes, "Well, it's Tim Hunter. He's going to play against his first game tomorrow night." So it was pretty cool to you know, all that to go through.
Imagine that today.
Like it's
we had to do that one year in the American League where we were playing Chicago, and I think it was the second round, the Wolves, and we were in Austin. I think it was after Game 5. We were flying back for Game 6, but both teams were on the same bus or same airplane. Flew to Chicago. We're just kind of sitting there, one on one side, one on the other, and we're just kind of looking at each other. And the steward, the flight attendants, the pilots found out later. Nobody was really talking to each other. It was just kind of like, it was really weird and awkward for the 2 hours.
Yeah, when I coached the World Junior. We had that Russia series in the beginning and in the early part of the season. They came over here and went through the three leagues and played games. And so we had to fly with them from Vancouver. We played a game against them in Vancouver, and then we flew up to Prince George to play a game there. And we had to fly with them, you know, and then they went to Edmonton. So we're flying around with these half the planes full of Russian hockey players, half the teams full of Canadian hockey players. Yeah, I won't tell you all the rest, but
yeah, it went okay.
Yeah, so, yeah.
How many games you stay up for that time?
Just two games, and so yeah. And then the Bruins. So it was, I think it was a Friday, Saturday. So yeah. Then the Bruins were hockey night game, and that was, you know, another great experience playing the Bruins. And then yeah, they just wanted me to, you know the Bruins and the Flyers, tough teams. They wanted to see how I would fare. So I go back to Colorado, or back to Oklahoma City. You know, playing, and then I hurt my knee, and I was out. So I came home to Calgary and rehabbed my knee until. And then the next season, I'm in Calgary and go to Colorado, and then down in Colorado, and I don't remember where we were playing, and Cliff Fletcher had come in to watch us. So after the game, they called me in. Oh, we're gonna go. We're gonna take you with us back to Calgary to play the last 10 games. It's right at the trade deadline, like around this time of year, early March, whatever it was. And I was gonna go back to Calgary, and there was a snowstorm, and we couldn't get out of Calgary, get out of, I think it was Oklahoma City or somewhere. It was a snowstorm. We couldn't get out and get to Calgary. So they didn't go and join the team, and then I didn't go. And so I stayed there for the rest of the year. Then I went up and played in the playoffs for Calgary and spent the next 11 years with the Flames.
What was that like playing in front of your being from Calgary, playing in Calgary, friends and family? What did that mean to you? And
first guy, being the first guy,
being
right?
The first guy in Calgary.
First Calgarian
for,
born.
Yeah, yeah. It's first Calgarian to score a goal for the Flames. My first goal.
In pieces.
Yeah, I still have the plaque today. I'm proud of it. Well, the thing was, is it's always about your family and your friends, because that's who help you get to where you want to go. Your family, the work they put in, and then your friends being supportive and, you know, buying you a few beers now and again, like my group across here. I had this ritual when not many nights I was in the starting lineup on the ice, but even when I did, so I would stand on the bench during the anthem, one or two songs, whichever, both, and I would look around the whole corral or the saddle dome, and I knew where everyone was sitting, all my family and friends, all their where they were, and I told them this. They all knew this, so they could see me going around, rotating around, and looking up into the stands and give them a nod. I wasn't waving at them. Like, hey, I just kind of give them a nod because I knew they were looking. And that kind of kept me, you know, grounded of what the purpose was this it was all about, right?
I remember one time I was playing playing with the Wolves. And I remember Patrick Lalime. He closed his eyes during the national anthem, and he'd rock back and forth. And he'd do this, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to try this, too. And so I'm doing this at the hash marks, the national anthem's going, and by the time I opened my eyes, I was standing in the corner. I had moved halfway across the ice looking into the stands myself. I looked like an idiot. Sorry, were you going to say something?
No.
Oh, yeah. I remember I opened my eyes, and the guy was looking at me, and I'm like, what the hell's happening here? This guy's looking, they're all laughing at me in the corner.
Yeah, one of those, and it was kind of like a, it relaxed me as well. It was a bit of a focus thing to, you know, like, and people would say, well, so you fought so many guys, and were you nervous when you're fighting, and were you nervous at game time? So I would do this little ritual before I had my nap, eat my pregame, then I'd either lay in the bed or sit in my bedroom, and I'd just think about, you know, the things I needed to work on. I was practice and the things the coaches said about the game. And then I'd think, oh, has they got anybody over there that I might have to fight? And I would think, okay, he's right, he's left, he does this, he does that. I kind of knew, I had a scouting report on everybody. I'd have my nap and never think about it again until, you know, we're playing the game and you're just playing naturally. You're just rolling with it. So I never put much thought into it. And I was never afraid of anyone. And I was never nervous, never anxious. And the other part of the routine was the looking around in the stands at family and friends. And when you're on the road, you got to do something else.
Another part of the routine, Hans, the Vaseline.
Well, yeah, you know, and I did lots of boxing. And we were fortunate to have a great boxing coach here, Mansur Ismail. He was Willie DeWitt's boxing coach. And so we trained with him. And, you know, in the early part of fighting, I never really, you know, boxing is a very interesting discipline. And these guys are super fit and they're super smart. The biggest thing about fighting is not getting hit.
Right.
And protecting yourself so you don't get hit. And if you do get hit, how to protect yourself and not get hit hard or get knocked out. And part of boxers, like, I don't know if you watch a boxing match, you go in the corner when they're finished the round, the guy wipes their face down and gives them water, and then he slathers their eyebrows and their nose and their cheekbones in Vaseline. The punches, they glance off. So I used to put a little on my, you know, my big bumper here in the middle. Yeah. You know, it's been re-chromed a few times, but some on the cheekbones and the eyebrows. And 200 and plus fights in the NHL. I was only cut 3 times in a fight.
Broke your nose?
That's for another question. So the Vaseline, and so we had young guys come up, Gary Roberts and Joe Neuendijk. They're coming in the back and before the game, right before, and they're wetting their hair down because, you know, they want to look good in the warm-up,
yeah,
for the anthem,
yeah,
and stuff.
That's what it's all about.
And I'm putting Vaseline on. They're going, Hans, what are you doing? I said, you guys should try this. It's called Instant Courage. I put it on my eyebrows, so if I get punched, it doesn't cut me, and it just glances off.
So I see Huntsy do it. I go, this is my first year. I go, you know, I'm going to try some. When I put it on, I got off the ice. You know, I didn't fight much, but I go, I got off the ice. I took it off. My freaking head, I don't know if it reacted to it or whatever. It was all red. I'm going, I'm not doing that again.
Never again. It doesn't work.
No.
Yeah.
You know, you just put it on your eyebrows and your cheeks, not on your forehead. Better.
I had it all over.
You'll bathe that. Yeah.
That's what your helmet's for, to protect the top of your head.
Jersey stuck to my head. All over.
Back to that question about your nose.
This is we go to all these events and fundraisers and auctions and hot stoves and. So I get asked, the two most asked questions are,
for sure,
who's the toughest guy you have ever fought and how many times you broke your nose? And I was telling this to my friends over here, and one of the gals says, well, people would ask me, you know, Timmy, how many times has he broken his nose? And she said, you know, I just say, have you ever met his mom? And it's true. Yeah. I said that to Ron.
Ruffy, your dad. I mean,
Ron, yeah. Ron McLean asked me this question. I said, if you've ever met my mom, you know I've never broken my nose. Her maiden name is Shoppe, Schoeppe. It's kind of a Bolshevik German name. And she said when we were kids, she'd say, you know, if you ever see a Shoppe blowing their nose in a bedsheet, you know it's a Shoppe. You know, I have this picture now. I found it. My aunt sent it to me years ago. It's my mom, my aunt, and my two uncles. And they're all pretty close in age. And the four of them in a picture. And you look, you're kind of going, oh, okay. There's the Shoppe nose. Yes, that's the Shoppe nose. So I show people and they go, yeah. I said, so, you know, those four never played one game in the NHL. And they have this nose. And I have that nose.
It's so funny. Like, you know, I've gotten to know you over the years. And you all go have a beer with people or whatever. And I'll say I sat down with you and had a beer. Like, has Huntsy ever broken? Has Tim Hunter ever broken his nose before? And I'm dying laughing. Like, and when I ask you that question for the first time, I couldn't believe it. I thought, for sure. It gets in the way. It leads your face. Like, it's
I've had it cut and scratched. Sure. And, you know, like I just say I had it re-chromed like an old Cadillac bumper kind of thing. You know, but no, it pardon the pun, it runs in the family.
Well, you know, I've heard the boys call you Sharky a handful of times, too. How did you get that?
Well, yeah. So, you know, I know Sharon Govich has got Sharky and so it goes back to this swimming thing. So I was a real good swimmer. and I love being in the water. So we were down in L.A. at the Marriott. They had this great kind of courtyard area, hot tub, bar, and pool, and we had a day off. So we all go down to the pool, having some beers, sitting around the pool, and so we, I don't know how it all started, and Pep's like, well, let's have a race and see how far we can go underwater, how who's can go the furthest and stay under the water the longest. So I'm like, I'm lapping guys. They're all out, and they're huffing and puffing. I'm still swimming under the water, and they're going, holy mackerel, Hunts is like a fish. And then I pop up, and I was on my back, and I was backstroking. I'm going, I'm the champ, and Pep yells down, clear the pool. There's a shark in the pool.
And all the boys are like, shark, yeah.
Shark. Just my nose is just going along. And, you know, it goes to a funny story because one of the funniest guys you're ever going to meet is Dave Elston. And, you know, he was a cartoonist for the Sun Media. Dave is so funny. So he always had some great characters and cartoons about, you know, when the Breathe Rights came out, he had this, I was in Vancouver at the time, and he's got this cartoon picture of me. I'm with the Canuck trainer, Larry Ashley, and, you know, and I've got like 20 Breathe Rights keep my nose open. And Larry's like, he's got an empty box of Breathe Lights, goes, Breathe Rights, and he's going, well, where'd all the Breathe Rights go? Hunts has got them on. So, and back to Dave. So Dave calls me. I play in my last year in San Jose, and he calls me up. He said, hey, because we're pretty good pals. He goes, hey, Hunts, I got a favor to ask you. The NHL has asked me to do some animated cartoons, and they're doing an opening thing for the season, and they want, you know, go through each team, their chances of winning the Stanley Cup, like what they are, and we're going to do some little cartoons with, you know, characters of the guys. And he said, you know, this is the shark thing, the sharky in the water. And he says, so here's what I'm asking you, okay. I said, okay, what is it, Dave? He says, well, it's the chances of winning the Stanley Cup. So we're in San Jose, and, you know, the Bay Area, it's like the ocean. We got the cup. It's in the water, just kind of floating on the top of the water. And then we're playing the theme song from Jaws. Dun, 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 dun. And then you see this shark going through the water, and it's going at the, you know, there was the San Jose Sharks going at the cup. And then you hear this clunk, and the shark hits the cup. And out of the water pops me.
That's so good.
I said, go ahead, Dave. Yeah. And I have never been able to find that again, to have a copy of it. It is hilarious. It's just like, you know, with my nose, we're talking about my nose, how many times you broke it and all these things. It seems that just when you thought you've heard every nose joke possible, you hear another one.
That one was the best. I remember. You're going to tell that one, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's a great one.
So we're going to L.A. for the first time. Bob Murdoch is now coaching, and he says, when I was playing for Montreal, it was great playing him, and then I got traded to L.A., and I'm playing in L.A., and he's telling me the story about being in L.A. and just joining the team, and he said, I was struggling. I was Mr. Plus Minus in Montreal, Mr. Plus, and I became Mr. Minus in L.A., and now the fans are getting on me because I was being away from my family and different team and all this, different structure, and I wasn't playing well. So started to get these hecklers, and he said, L.A., there's the one guy. He sits up behind the penalty box, and the building was dead quiet, and I get a penalty, and I go in the box, he says, and just the guy just clunk, closed the door, and he yells down, lock it. Don't let him out. Yeah, the whole building, he says it was like priceless, and everyone started laughing. He was like, what happens? I get in a fight. I go into the penalty box, and, you know, all the rocks, everything's just dead quiet, and this same guy yells down, hey, Hunter, hang up the phone. And I'm like, Jesus, Murphy, this guy is like priceless. And the funny thing is, the first real nose kind of joke comment, I was like 13 or 14, And my friend sitting over here, Janice, her last name, main name is Hamilton. Her dad is Zeke Hamilton. Her uncle's Al, who played in Edmonton for the Oilers. So we grew up together, and her two brothers, Randy and Greg, were playing baseball at Stanley Park here in Calgary. And they have that Little League park there, and they were in the Little League finals of Alberta or something. So I go to watch them, and I'm standing out in the outfield with Zeke, and Zeke's smoking a cigarette. And it's just him and I, and we're way out in the outfield, and it starts to lightly rain. And he takes a cigarette. He goes, "Here, keep this dry for me." 14-year-old kid. I'm like, come on.
This dry for me.
I'm like, so I've heard a lot of them. You know, one of my favorite ones was, we had Bob, and he had that bulbous end on it. And this one is like, so we all remember Norm Edwards. He was the morning guy here, and he was a little bit off color at times, you know. And
yep. Funny.
So, funny. Oh, just hilarious guy. So they had these Molson Cup luncheons, and we're doing this luncheon. And Norm's up there, and he's going to introduce the whole team, you know, Bob. And Bob always had these funny little things he talked about, the state of the Flames, you know. So he gets up there, and he starts rubbing his nose like Bob always rubbed his nose, and then he'd wipe his nose with his tie, and he's rubbing his nose. He says, "You know, the next guy I'm going to introduce, the head coach of the Flames," he says, "you know, if I had a nose like that, I'd get it circumcised."
Oh, man, great stuff with Tim Hunter this week on the program. Tim Hunter, Calgary born and raised, all-time franchise leader in penalty minutes, sitting down with Brent Cron and sitting down with Colin Patterson, and that'll start to wrap us up on this week's episode. Some great, great stories, and stay tuned for part two of Tim Hunter on next week's episode. But right now, it's starting to wrap things up. That has been another edition of the Cumming and Gillespie LLP Flames Alumni Chronicles. Cumming and Gillespie LLP, personal injury and medical malpractice lawyers committed to getting maximum compensation for the injured and their families. Visit CummingGillespie.com. This program available wherever you get your podcasts on the Flames Talk podcast feed. Thanks to Brent Cron. Thanks to Colin Patterson. Thanks to our guest of honor, Tim Hunter. My name is Pat Steinberg, and we'll see you on the next episode.